Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Shake Them Ropes, Jeff Hawkins, Chris Novembrino, this week sponsored by MyBookie.ag. A little bit more about that later. Big news week, Chris. Where to start on all this? Because this is Saturday morning. If you're watching on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel, we're doing Cooking with Chris Novembrino, Cooking with Novi, Cooking with Cats.
We're in the cat kitchen once again. A little bit later, I'm going to tell you how to make a delicious breakfast quiche featuring cherry tomatoes and an omelet you are absolutely going to die for. But first, we have all the news from AEW and WWE. Jeff, take it away.
Why didn't I have you host this show? Why am I hosting? I'm the curmudgeon who counterpunches. You're chipper because you had a date last night, so.
And I have a charming little breakfast milk I'm going to take you all to a little bit later on in a delightful bodega.
R.I.P. to Charles Grodin, Roger Hawkins of the Swampers. No relation, although I love the Swampers. Haven't seen Muscle Shoals, the documentary. And then also, wrestling-wise, Don Kernodle, who was kind of ships passing in the night for my fandom. He was big right before I started watching NWA, Jim Crockett in the Carolinas, but he was a college wrestler in North Carolina. Just a tragic story. If the Dave audio on this was something, Chris, it was, Don Kernodle went to the heart doctor because he was having some issues. He got a bad diagnosis, went home and shot himself. What else is going on today? Just like, whoa. It's like, oh my goodness. I don't have a banter subject, so I mean, I'll go into the news. Why not?
I on this week's Don't Worry About the Government, if you want to see me eat unbelievably spicy chicken and make fun of Cody, that's available. And Trisha, things are going well with the relationship, and I'm hoping to have Cats in the mix here throughout the course of this episode. Elsewise, let us continue, Jeff.
Yeah, starting with cuts in the NXT part of the WWE Universe. Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful, friend of the show, reporting that Kavita Devi, Jessamyn Duke, Ezra Judge, Skylar Story, a.k.a. Brandi Lorne, Vanessa Bourne, Alexander Wolfe, Velveteen Dream, and referees Drake Wurtz and Jake Clements have been released from the company. So for context, those of you who may not recognize some of these stories or some of these names, Kavita Devi was on both Mae Young Classics, overpushed basically for the point of getting YouTube hits in India. That was her point. Jessamyn Duke, of course, one of the friends of Ronda Rousey, part of those four horsewomen there, mostly appearing now on Up, Up, Down, Down streams that they do there.
She was either play or fight.
She was play. She was also Raw Underground segment featuring Marina Shafir at one point. I think that's the last time we saw her on actual television. Skylar Story, a.k.a. Brandi Loren, Joey Janela's girlfriend, or used to be his girlfriend. She was only featured once, and that was in the hot tub when Damian Priest got in after winning the North American title. I think that was just a signing for to keep her away from AEW. That's my opinion. Ezra Judge was never on TV. Bodybuilder, former NFL player, 6'8". I believe that this may have been tied in with possible issues with Drake Wirtz backstage, but that is unconfirmed. And Jake Clemens, who you may not recognize, he was the Seth Rollins referee in that one skit where he was wearing the Seth Rollins shirt underneath. Never made television again, probably because, people are going to think of him as the Seth Rollins referee. The other names you probably recognize go from least to biggest. I'll say Drake Wirtz, referee, mostly known due to issues politically that he is involved with. Former wrestler, former deathmatch wrestler who cleaned up his life of drugs and stuff and took this opportunity to be a referee. But yeah, I believe that was probably a PR story that they could not contain. And so he is gone. These are all claimed as budget cuts, by the way, Chris. These are budget cuts.
These are all budget cuts from the highly wildly profitable company. So, like, I mean, going back to the story last year when we were talking about budget cuts, I mean, the way they deploy this argument is really unconscionable. But now, like, moving back to Drake Wirtz in specific, I mean, look, there is a real issue when you make your political views wildly outspoken at work. And this is obviously a moving and dynamic subject that changes decade to decade. I mean, year to year, there is asymmetry in the way that we respond to how political people are at work or whatever. However, in the case specifically about Drake Wirtz, I think that he had been, based on the allegations around Ezra Judge.
That's his NXT.
Yeah, the Ezra Judge story, which centers around the George Floyd murder last year, and Triple H giving a speech that was rather anodyne. This workplace supports people of all races, creeds, and religions, and based on that story, that didn't look great for Wirtz. That kind of makes you a bit of a target at work. The fact that he had appeared in a political setting wearing an NXT t-shirt, wearing the work t-shirt in a political context, which sort of inherently drags the business into politics, whether they want to be in it or not. And then, you know, look, the mass stuff, any number of other things going on with Drake Wirtz. And then it gets down to, look, if you start rubbing enough of your colleagues the wrong way, eventually your colleagues are, one, not going to have your back anymore, and two, kind of make it subtextually clear that if there is a point, a station wherein you can be left at that train station, so to speak, it will be encouraged. And, you know, I think Drake was playing with fire here, and I don't know if it's personal instabilities that are rubbing up again, not understanding the realities of where he worked or the 21st century, any number of different things. But yeah, no, he had to go. And I, you know, I feel no pity, no shame. And I think the reporting around him, even if you have questions about specifics in any one given story, I think the body of work, including the public videographic evidence, is overwhelming. And yeah, sad day for him.
I have thoughts, but they're not pert.
No, you didn't get your thoughts out.
It was probably more of a reaction that he thought he could do an equal reaction and probably took it a little bit too far. It's like, well, these people are saying things about their politics. I can say things about mine, and I'm going to be louder and even more obnoxious. And it's one of those issues. That's what I,
So, I mean, okay, Like, I guess that would maybe apply specifically to George Floyd and Black Lives Matter. Although, again, like, George Floyd killed on camera, like, in a sort of very graphic and vivid way.
Let me expound just a little bit.
Let me just finish this circuit here, because I don't have a long thought here. When it gets into COVID-19 and it becomes a matter of workplace safety and public health, it's not purely political anymore. At that point, it is, I do not feel safe working with this person because this person is expressing, I do not believe that this virus can get me because, you know, I think it's all hype or whatever. And I think that that is fundamentally different than, like, I support John Kerry in the 2004 election.
Yeah, no, it's not banal thinking, but there's an undercurrent of victimization that isn't there. And it's like if that report about him storming out of the Triple H meeting is true, that's what it goes into for me. It's a hey, we support a multicultural, multi-religious, multi-this workplace. And he's going, oh, I'm tired of this oppression. And he storms out, you know, that kind of thing. That's what I meant by that. You know, opposition in terms of that's how he views, that's how other people are expressing their views. So he's going to express it that way. That's how I viewed a lot of people and their politics of late.
No, you know, in a way, I think a different way of putting this is it puts you at loggerheads with management. Management is trying to come out and just make, like, the basic, more or less, in fulfillment of the law of a standard workplace.
Yeah, and
of
if they,
like,
bring him,
we are not going to discriminate
yeah,
against
if
you.
If they bring, like, him in for a meeting and go, hey, you know what, Drake, you know, you know, we appreciate that you like volunteering for your church and that, you know, human trafficking ministry is a passion of yours. Maybe don't wear the NXT shirt. Maybe don't play footsie with QAnon conspiracy stuff of that nature, and then it's like, why is management being so oppressive of my beliefs? You know, that kind of thing. I just, you know.
Yeah, right. That's the other thing too. I mean, I think there is a missing beat here. You know, I know the QAnon stuff is the most salacious, you know, for those of us who do not believe that there's anything to QAnon, it's always a fascinating one. But there are much more sort of, like, tangible things of, like, hey, you do go to these meetings and you sort of, like, make it clear that a big part of your identity is that you work for our company. So you are inherently at all of these things dragging us into the mix. And, like, perhaps you might point to a performer like Cedric Alexander wearing a Black Lives Matter band in the ring, but it's not a one-to-one ratio either. Like, Cedric Alexander putting BLM on a band on his arm is far different than you being, like, the public face in some of these QAnon forums as, like, the NXT WWE guy. So I think this is much putting management in a undesirable position as it is anything else, but we have other
yeah,
cuts.
No,
to talk
I was about
like
to,
have,
I was about to transition.
No, for sure. I wanted to give the Drake words. I mean, look, there's been a lot of stories around this guy for the last several months here. I think that people were interested to see how the company was going to handle this situation, and I think they let it go on a little too long, but, like, ultimately in the end, it's good, just like Velveteen Dream. It's very much like Velveteen Dream. This is a situation that went on probably several months longer than it needed to go on, given that you had enough information on hand to make a decision one way or another. And nothing substantially changed in the case of Drake Works or Velveteen Dream from, let's say, March to now.
The most curious case for me personally is that of Vanessa Bourne. Originally penciled in, I believe, to go up to the main roster last January after the Rumble.
I thought she was officially on the main roster. I thought it was like, it was beyond a penciling in. It was like, Vanessa Bourne is on the main roster.
I don't know. And the people I talk to don't know really either. Spent most of COVID out in Scottsdale with her family, but then later was traveling to Texas for audition. Didn't appear to ever be in Orlando for tapings. A number of projects were pitched in terms of other things. Apparently, Paul Heyman, back in the day, really wanted her. She was one of those names, so that might have had a lot to do with why she was never put on TV after Paul Heyman was taken off of the Raw creative? You know, not a great wrestler, but a great look, as they say.
She could have absolutely
She could have survived on the main roster.
Yeah, a manager. I think it's unfortunate that her career up till now in wrestling has not really played to her strength.
Pitched as a manager at one point and rejected by the talent that it was pitched to. So
I'll tell you what, though. There's a rehabilitation circuit if she wants to go that route of like doing like NWA, doing like Impact stuff where you have a little bit more creative control of your presentation as a character. You can kind of hit the reset button. She could go to AEW and be a perfectly good manager and occasional performer type of person. I think that there is still a spot for her. And I never thought that in-ring performer was necessarily the best utilization of what Vanessa Bourne had to offer either. So, you know,
I would rather she was the manager. Like I would rather she'd be the manager than Vicky Guerrero. Be honest with you. I think she brings more to the table than Vicky Guerrero as a manager, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. I actually can name a number of managers that I think Vanessa Bourne, you know, is better, would be a better fit or like add more to the act at this point. You know, like I don't think Melina as a manager is necessarily turning in like top level performances these days. Just to name one,
Jake Roberts.
I mean, like, or like you could see the Acclaim. Like Vanessa Bourne slotted in with the Acclaim. I think, you know,
that would be fun.
Yeah, I think she could be a really fun addition to that act. So yeah, no, I do see potential
the
for
Acclaim
her too.
Have grown on me so much.
I really like them. Bowens, his little brief promo this week, I was like, okay, I see where he fits in. And you know, I've been up on Max Caster. I drive the Max Caster bandwagon.
We'll talk about
I don't later, like in the internet wrestling community, I drive the bandwagon on Max Caster.
Not surprising, but still to me kind of tragic because of how underrated he was. Alexander Wolf, straight off of getting a beat down from Imperium. Given his walking papers, that guy made that first War Games match pop. And even if it was accidental in many ways, getting cut in the back of the head, but he was throwing some suplexes in that match, and I loved it. I liked kind of the instability of the Alexander Wolf character. I had kind of hoped they had brought that to Imperium as kind of him being the shady guy in Imperium who really wasn't in on the mat is sacred thing, but was just kind of joining to beat people up. I liked him in
And he liked winning. Yeah. I liked the idea of him as just the absolute opportunist willing to put on the suit because the suit meant winning. No, this is very disappointing. I think if I was WWE, you extend him for at least another month or 2 months just to wrap up the Imperium angle, to get your maximum play out of that. I think where they had written Wolf at this point, there was some intrigue as to like the Dane and Wolf interplay again. Was Wolf going to get redeemed? And, you know, to your point, Wolf is an in-ring performer. He's good. He's not like a main event guy, but like good mechanics, steady hand, you know, I don't mean them as backhanded compliments. Like this is the type of guy that the guys you want to build up have great matches with, and it makes them look like $1 million. Like I think Wolf has a real spot in the biz, and it's a shame. I don't feel like he's, for a guy who I don't see as a main event guy or even as a champion, I also feel like he was somehow underutilized.
I think he, you know what? I think he was great in NXT UK. I gotta be honest with you. I would have sent him back if they didn't want to use him on the States. Send him back to NXT UK. That angle leaded with
him and Teoman would be a very fun tag team together.
Or even, you know, have Ilya destroy him again. I liked that interplay between the two of them. I think they were great.
Oh, they are great together. No, Wolf is just, he's a very underrated, like he's a sneaky good guy in the ring. And you don't necessarily see it because the character's haphazard looking and he's not like a look guy. But like those German suplexes, all of his working clotheslines and punches, his ability to give and take, like he looks good when he's on offense. He looks good when he's selling. I mad respect for Alexander Wolf, and I hope they land on his
and feet. Then Velveteen Dream. Oh, Patrick.
Everything I just said about Alexander Wolf, take it and slice it into a quarter for Velveteen Dream at most. The guy, look, he had a look. He was kind of an okay character act, I suppose.
He was mad over, Chris. Let's not slight that. He was hugely over.
He was
in
really
NXT.
Over.
He
was really
over-delivered. He really over-delivered in big matches against like Gargano and Ciampa, but he never got to that next gear in terms of in-ring storytelling.
He didn't really know how to call a match like that. All of his matches were formatted around working legacy spots, and so like you're right, he was mad over. However, his everything up to the match was up here. And the match was always down here. You're right. He over-delivered. However, like, he over-delivered on low expectations in those Gargano and Ciampa matches. We were expecting some growth. He looked good. But then he also plateaued. He discovered the, I'm going to do the Macho Man spot. I'm going to do the Hogan spot.
He became a tribute band. He became a cover band.
He was doing covers of 1988. And he never actually developed his own match style. He had the noodle punches, the big old noodle, the wet noodle punches. Like his kicks and his physicality lacked. He didn't necessarily build up the body the way he needed to build up the body. High spots were good, but sometimes noodly as well. You're right, though. On the top of the ramp, at the top of the entranceway, when the music's on, Velveteen Dream. And they slide out the couch with the babes, and he's out there looking like $1 million. He looks like a main event act. But then there's one other thing that we haven't mentioned yet. Well, we all mentioned he's kind of a jerk. Beyond
creep.
Kind of a jerk, a little bit creep. Of a monster, kind creep. Of a creep. likes the youngies. A bit of a rape guy, as I like to call them. Rape guy, all one word, not necessarily two words separated apart. He's a creeper. We don't like these type of people, and this guy needs to be gone from the business.
Yes, if you get drunk or high, as it has been rumored that Velveteen Dream liked some of the harder substances, don't go on the internet and slide into the DMs, especially the DMs of someone... less than 18, shall we say, to be...
You know, it's not even about sliding into the DMs and having a documentary evidence of it. Just don't do it. Just don't do it. Just don't do it. You like, actually don't have to date teenagers. You can date people your own age.
I don't like think a guy like Patrick Clark has a hard time getting women, especially as I believe he dated Kathy Kelly at one point. I think there's a... Rolodex, possibly, of people on the phone. Just scroll through.
It's not there's like a litany of people. I'm not going to get lost in the weeds here. There are a litany of people with allegations sort of like this. And like the thing that always goes through my mind is you dudes make like well over $50,000, $60,000 a year. How hard is it for you to go to a nightclub or a bar and meet someone your own age the normal way and not be a creeper going out with an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old as a 30-something or like late 20-something-year-old guy?
I believe he's barely mid-20s. I think he was like 19. Don't quote. He's younger than you think.
You know, I mean, like, I remember the Tough Enough thing because, like, I actually did the closed captioning for that particular Tough Enough series. Like, I was very much on the Patrick Clark journey with this kid. And so, like, I was kind of rooting for him. But, like, you know, look, sometimes power corrupts people. And power is not necessarily, like, political power. Power can just sometimes be status and money. And Patrick Clark seems like the type of person whose character was sort of really revealed by even a modest amount of power here. Unfortunate. Beyond unfortunate, it's gross.
Jumping over to other news, The Miz tore his ACL at WrestleMania Backlash in that zombie match.
I thought he worked safe, Jeff.
Look, I'm not gonna take that. I hate that response. I gotta be honest with you. I'm really angry at
that's just a that's
I, no,
a joke
I understand.
About
I understood it, but people
drama.
Were making that as, you know, oh, I thought he worked safe when he talked about Daniel Bryan 4 years ago. Okay, Miz is in his, he's and in his 40s.
Like the context of a work shoot. Yeah, yeah, it was a joke. Also, yeah, you're right. Like ACLs and stuff like that, they just, they go.
Go if you keep doing that, you know, over and at his age. And look, Vince used to get rid of people at 35 thinking they were too old. Miz is in his 40s now, still looks good, still, you know, does the safe style. It's just these things happen in wrestling. So he's unsafe. That's why he tore his ACL. There were people seriously saying stuff. And I'm just like, shut up. but this could be, no, this could be, I mean,
even the safe style is still, even the safe style is sometimes like physical. You're still tumbling out of the ring. You know, like just even like kind of small stuff like that, you know, you land the wrong way, you tweak your ankle or whatever, you have a series of small nagging injuries that you've been mildly favoring this way and that way for a minute, and you never actually got surgical work on it, but the favoring this way and that way also makes you a little weeble wobbly and maybe makes that ACL or MCL a little less stable than it ought to be. You're getting up there in age, over the age of like 35, 40. And yeah, like that, you know, ACL tear's not unheard of. I don't know. He might be back. He might not be back. I don't think he, I don't necessarily think he cares either way. I mean, like, look, he got,
I think he cares.
He got a thank you title run just
this
year.
I think he cares, but here's the good news for Miz. Number one, you have a built-in story now for your next season of your reality show.
That's true.
He is in his 40s. Don't know, you know, I know he wants to go till he's 50, but, you know, time passes. But he also probably has a job for life in commentary if he wants it. WWE commentary, where he says all the right things. And
yeah, or as general manager of The Miz. I mean, like, this is a guy who has secured for himself a lifetime of work on WWE television. And it'll probably be increasingly out of the ring. But yeah, no, I think he's on a sunset program. Because he's not John Cena. Actually, in a way, he is Vince's dream creation. A guy big enough to have a TV show, but not big enough to be a standalone brand and entity. So he always needs WWE as a shoulder to lean
on. I'm
going
to cut you off on the he's not John Cena. Because he also does movies, although Cena's now getting much more high recognition movies. He does right. he does a water obstacle course show. I'm like, he's almost John Cena, but not quite John Cena.
No, but like Cena has also done bigger movies than The Miz ever has. Yeah, and Cena is a better known name. Cena is a meme. Like, and his name is John Cena. Like no, there's
yeah,
no comparison.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was just
The Miz status to it, Cena's it, status.
Wipeout is much better, though. Whatever Miz's show is, Cannonball is much better than Wipeout. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I believe that, but also the other thing is Cena is also just a more dynamic personality on TV too. Yeah, no, I've seen the promos for both, but Cena's interplay with his co-star, I don't know her name. It doesn't really matter at this point for what I'm talking about here. But his interplay with his co-star just seems like bigger, pops off your screen a little bit more than the Miz's interplay with his co-star, where they're just kind of there.
Yeah, one's a radio person. So yeah.
Yeah, and so what I'm saying is that like I do think that Miz will he's going to be protected very, very well by this company a long time. And he's good, to your point, he's good politically. If he ever gets on commentary, he's not a guy who's going to freelance or make waves. He knows where his bread's buttered, unlike a guy like Pat McAfee, who, what I enjoy about him on commentary, is that Pat, like, doesn't really need this job. So he's like,
the danger aspect that he doesn't need this.
He's taking the notes. He's taking the notes and he's listening, but he's also kind of like going to just do his own thing. And that's what makes this thing great.
I love I still want to have my fun, even though I'm doing my job.
I'm doing my thing. Yeah. I'm getting my shit in.
WWE announced its first three shows in July. Friday, July 16th, episode of SmackDown will take place at Toyota Center in Houston, Texas. This year's Money in the Bank pay-per-view will be held at the Dickies Arena in Fort Worth, Texas. And on Sunday, July 18th, the post-Money in the Bank episode of Raw will take place at the American Airlines Center in Dallas, Texas. On Monday, July 19th.
In the road, baby. Nova Cross, Texas. We're going to all the places. Oh,
between AEW and WWE, Texas wrestling is back.
Bro, I think that Texas is going to have an inordinate amount of shows here over the next like 12 months. They are going to work Texas dry. Lanza and I are going to be like, no more wrestling. Please stop coming to Texas. Please like go to Oklahoma. Go elsewhere. Please go away.
Can I interest you in any of those shows for WWE?
AEW, oh, okay. Yes. No, the WWE ones, honestly, no. Like, look, I watched this on TV.
SmackDown? There was visit her.
I mean, okay, bank. SmackDown and go and visit our friends. I mean, you know, like, part of it, dude, is I could always make a call or two if I really wanted to go.
Yeah,
to
that's
WWE
true.
Shows.
Money in the Bank might be fun.
Money in the Bank might be. I've now seen Hell in a Cell live, WrestleMania live. I think I've seen Money in the Bank live. And you're right. Of all the shows, I mean, look, the ladder match ones are great because if you're in a crowd, you can definitely see the ladder action in the big ladder spots or whatever. Hell in a Cell, like, I'm sure people have heard this before. Hell in the Cell kind of does stink because you're behind the cell. However, in my case, I got to watch that ridiculous Bray Wyatt hologram finish in person, so it was actually worth it. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. That's yeah. Weird. I had no idea what the hell was going
on. Is that the one with the child?
The wrong angle.
Is that the one with Jameson's kid? Yeah, okay. That kid was Jameson's son. Jameson from the Heathens. Yeah. One last piece before we go into other news from other companies. Mike Speedball Bailey and WWE are apparently in negotiations. WWE will get his visa and red tape issues cleaned up. I am not for this move at all because I think...
Why not?
I love Speedball Bailey. One of my favorite parts of PWG shows back in the mid-aughts, I would say. Or not mid-aughts, but mid-tens. He has Jake Atlas Part 2 / 205 Live written all over him, Chris. He's going to do... Who's
Jake Atlas?
He's that guy on NXT who...
What's a Jake Atlas?
Yeah, exactly. He's smaller. He's a flippy-doo guy. And every time I see a flippy-doo guy now, it's like, how's he going to flip to take an RKO and kill his career? Because that's all it is, man. I think he'd be best served in an ROH or an MLW or maybe an AEW, but I mean, they already have kind of an ironic favorite. And if Orange Cassidy was not an AEW, I would tell Speedball Bailey, go to AEW and work that Karate Kid gimmick to the nub because it would be mad over. But
look, AEW has enough television to fill up at this point that they do need lower mid card guys and like, you know, maybe go and work the Karate Kid gimmick and work your way up the ladder. Cassidy's at the top of the ladder right now. They need, you know, we are going to move to AEW. I think they're going to need Friday night stars. You know what I mean? Like, I think they're ultimately going to need to make some more stars and have some stars on a specific night to keep eyes on those shows.
Speaking of which, AEW moving to TBS in 2022. The main show, Dynamite, will continue to run 8 to 10 p.m. on Wednesdays. AEW received an 8-figure fee increase to move the show. Wow. Since the prior contract called for it being on TNT through the end of 2023. It is believed the new deal for the complete package was not extended from the original deal. Rampage, the second show, will debut on Friday nights from 10 to 11 p.m. on TNT on August 13th, and will also be moved to TBS in January. Rampage will generally be taped on Wednesday nights, but there will be special Friday night live tapings on pay-per-view weeks. Here's they will run the city they are doing the pay-per-view in, for example, on November 5th. It was already announced for a taping at the Chavez Center in St. Louis, and Full Gear will be in the same building on November 6th. Right now, the plan is a mix of all tapings for Dynamite, Rampage, Dark Elevation, and Dark some weeks being on Wednesdays, and some weeks splitting up tapings on Wednesdays and Fridays. In addition, AEW will remain on TNT for 4 special events per year, said to be formats similar to WCW's old Clash of the Champions or Saturday Night's Main Events, which when it was a big deal in the 80s. Since WWE owns the Clash of the Champions name, the live specials will give the company 4 new destination dates per year and will have another name. Incidental thoughts. wrist, and then I'll go into mine.
Yeah. I mean, okay, so it's like, it's complicated. Obviously, you say things like they're getting an 8 million or an 8-figure increase to move the brand over to TBS, and they're getting another hour. And like, some of these top line things are very good things. However, you invoked WCW, and when I heard about Rampage, the first word that popped in my brain was thunder. I immediately thought of, okay, AEW is starting to have a WCW thunder problem, where you have so many friggin' hours of television, there is going to be an oversaturation issue. Are you going to watch Elevation? Are you watching Elevation Dark? Are you watching Rampage? Obviously, you're going to watch Dynamite, but another problem is that, like, AEW is now going to feel some onus to put additional content on this additional Elevation Dark and Rampage combined up for 3 additional hours of TV a week, right? Or is it 4? Is Elevation 2 hours or 1 hour?
I believe it's 2.
Okay, so you have 4 additional hours of TV beyond Dynamite. So you have either this issue of, is Dynamite canon, and do I as a regular casual AEW person only need to watch Dynamite to know what the hell's going on in this show? Or are you starting to make AEW a WWE-like experience where I am mandated to plow through 6 hours of AEW content every week to have a sense of what's going on, or at absolute minimum, at least do Wednesday night and then also Friday night as well? I get why Tony Khan, on one level, looked at the I don't want to expand out Dynamite to 3 hours thing because I don't want to have the Monday Night Raw problem on my hands. But I think he's created another problem for himself in saying, I don't want to do the Raw model. I want to do the Thunder model.
My first thought was NWA Main Event, which premiered on, or not the Power Hour. Something was a Friday night show that the NWA WCW did where the hook was you'll be able to see main events from arenas that you wouldn't be able to see on TV. And then the ratings started to crater and it would get preempted occasionally, I think, by Braves baseball or something. And then eventually it just became just another show with squash matches filmed from Disney. And I hated the Disney look and the center stage and all those other just vapid, soulless arena type setups that WCW had in the day, if you remember those. I also think my first reaction to this was TNT wants wrestling off of them to rebrand themselves as a harder, quote unquote, sports network with the NHL contract. Now,
and I think that kind of hurts wrestling too. I think wrestling is at its best and finds its casual audience in the easiest way when it's the thing that's right after hard sports. So you watch hockey and then after hockey, wrestling's on. And you just kind of, hockey as the lead into wrestling is actually a great lead in for wrestling because the same dudes who are watching hockey might actually keep a blood and guts match on if it's the first thing that leads off Dynamite
afterwards.
Now,
I know a lot of people poo-pooed this. Actually, the second half. It's not the first half of this to me was, well, maybe somebody whispered, you know, TBS and wrestling are synonymous, so let's put it there. And that sounds like something that maybe Cody might bring up. But I do think that there is something to associating one channel with your product, much like USA and WWE are linked. I don't like the idea of doing the Clash things on TNT while keeping the regular builds on TBS. I get the...
Isn't the implication that TNT is better than TBS?
Yes.
Just that model, it seems like the conceit here, and you can put the dollar tag on it and explain to me all the other reasons why going to TBS is good. But when you say, we're moving you to TBS, but we're still going to give you 4 specials on TNT, the implication is what you'd really want to be is still on TNT.
And I do think TNT has been a more prestigious network. Number one, mostly since they did the external, and now I think it's more of an internal policy of TBS is the comedy channel, TNT is the drama channel. Like, TNT always had the NBA on there for a number of years, even before that rebranding type of thing. But to me, I think TNT is a more prestigious network now than TBS. And I know people go, well, it's all the same brand. It's all Turner. It's about brand extension, blah, 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 blah. There is a certain comfort level in, okay.
And if you believe that, okay, if you believe that, did AEW maybe make their own bed here over the last year with some of the wacky, zany comedy instead of biasing towards a more serious model?
That's possible. That is entirely possible. Yeah,
Maybe AEW would still be on TNT if they had rolled out like a more serious hard sport presentation, but like the we're going to have Orange Cassidy fall into, you know, orange juice sort of stuff and Pratt falling as like they're getting sprayed with champagne or orange juice or cream soda or whatever the beverage is that week. Maybe TNT executives looked at that and were like, I don't know, this is TNT. This seems more like a comedy thing. Comedy is where we put on TBS.
Well, I mean, you're going to have blood and guts stuff. And I understand that line. And I appreciate it. I think it's more of a bigger wrestling's kind of embarrassing to this other stuff. And, you know, it's kind of like how Fox treats SmackDown now on live reads where Joe Buck, here we go with the SmackDown read. Join Sasha Banks as she, you know, that kind of thing where they'd have to do it. Like Marv Albert was a pro doing live AEW reads. Other people on the TNT broadcast, not so much. So you could stick it over to TBS where I don't think they do Braves games on TBS anymore. Do they? I'm not sure. I haven't watched a baseball game in ages.
I'm like not a Braves guy. I actually was kind of hard anti-Braves because it always annoyed me that they had their own network putting out their Braves propaganda all
they
over
were
the
America's
country,
team on the Superstation.
Trying to convince me that I was supposed to like it. That's how I felt about the Dallas Cowboys before I moved to Texas. I was like, why do you guys keep pumping this America's team propaganda down my throat? I don't need
Chris,
it.
It's not patriotic.
No. Nailed it.
Yeah, I viewed it as almost an internal policy decision more than hey, we're giving you the privilege of taking these great ratings you got on TNT and going over to TBS and helping to build them. You know,
I'm okay. One last thought about Rampage is kind of like what you're saying with the NWA Power Hour. I think it is always a bad thing for a wrestling brand when you have like a new extension or spinoff and that limb withers or dies or like bombs in the ratings and that sort of thing. It sort of signals to the powers that be that there is a hard ceiling of how far this AEW thing can grow. So, I mean, I think, look, in the short term, the contract is good. In the long term, I think that they really need to assess how they are writing these 6 hours of television every week to make an engaging viewer product. Because, like, you know, for the logistics of this show, great, great illustration of this. At this point, you and I have had absolutely no talk about including Elevation or Elevation Dark into our weekly digest of kind of required stuff that we're going to cover here on Shake Them Ropes. Nor would we, because not enough plot moves through them right now. And if Rampage is like that as well, what is like, why? Like, why have three additional shows that are like things that like even wrestling reviewers go like, I don't need to watch this. I don't feel that way about Dynamite, obviously. But I do feel that way about the other extensions.
All these things were counter-programmed to make you want to have a time sync with AEW, much in the same way WWE wants you to have a time sync with them. That's the only thing I see. Because the people who watch Dark don't want to watch Raw or don't want to watch NXT or whatever. So, I mean, That to me is the strategy there. I don't agree with it. And you have to start paying me, kids, if you want me to watch all that wrestling. Because there's only so many hours in the day, I'll be honest. I can't do that.
Yeah, no, at that point, it really becomes work. And so, yeah, no, if I had to review those, I mean, I think we would pay all those just because it's like so much additional. It's a lot of lemon squeezing for not a lot of juice.
We're not Joe Lanza. So, we don't have that no-show mob job that...
yeah, like his, okay, so like I'm not working for an Italian restaurant that's a mafia front. So I don't have that issue. I actually have to go to my job.
He kidding me, buddy, because we care, but he loves the Sopranos way too much. Give a shout out to our sponsor, mybookie.ag. Baseball and basketball are long. Those seasons are long. Baseball lasts more than a year. Really, there's like 365 days in a year, and baseball season lasts 2,000 days.
Yeah, no, it goes on for 388. Lord. I don't understand how that works.
And with up to 400 potential matches a month, you can make each and every one matter by having skin in the game with MyBookie.ag. Whether you're placing a wager on your favorite team, player, or just looking for kicks, MyBookie gives you the best odds and tons of options to make all your favorite sports a hell of a lot more exciting. You can bet on the NBA playoffs, which are currently going on right now, the NHL playoffs, if you're a hockey nut. You know, take advantage of odds on, you know, what's the third? Oh, the Belmont, I think, is next. Or no, the Preakness is next. Whatever horse in the Triple Crown thing's coming up. Or just hit up the MyBookie Casino for the full-fledged experience, where weekly blackjack tournaments give you and your friends a crack at prize pools up to $50,000.
Did you say slapjack tournaments?
I said blackjack tournaments. Slapjack tournaments are where you sit back and cater and play catering and play cards for...
How dare you?
But yes, blackjack tournaments, which give you and your friends a crack at prize pools up to 50 grand. Go to mybookie.ag, sign up now, and use our promo code ROPES, R-O-P-E-S, to get your first deposit matched up to $1,000. Let them know we sent you. So use our promo code ROPES, R-O-P-E-S, to get that free deposit bonus. Start your day off with a win. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. And we thank MyBookie for their sponsorship. Yeah, I slapjack tournaments. There is a card game called. There is a card game called Slapjack, as you are aware, a kids game.
Yeah, there is.
So
there
you
is.
Can do slapjack tournaments back in catering while you're wondering what they're gonna do with Shane Thorne and Mia Yim over on.
He should put a card on his mask like the Ace of Spades. Or
no,
something.
It would be the Jack of Spades because that's slapjack.
That's true.
And then he'd enter the ring and guys would whack him on the head for the 1-2-3.
They go strong style. No, bro. Like his new gimmick is he goes strong style, but he wears the mask, so like it hurts your hand every time you slap him, and then he just waylays you.
Stop
no, it's
this.
Great, dude. He'd be like Oneida. Yeah.
Oneida, you mean?
Yeah, either one.
Oh, ratings news. Interesting in some ways, maybe not so much. AEW Dynamite averaged 821,000 viewers on TNT, down 12.3% from last week. It's the lowest viewership of the show since April 7th. Last night, NXT aired directly opposite them. NXT, on the other hand, 700,000 viewers, 0.15 in the 18 to 49 demo and 0.07 in 18 to 34. Some say it was the NBA playoffs, but the Lakers game did not start until after AEW Dynamite. So, a little disappointing, but there's the ebb and flow of wrestling, I guess, in that there's about 1.5 million viewers of wrestling, and they're not coming over to each other's shows, it appears.
No, I mean, that's the problem, or even more alarming, which I'm starting to think is there's maybe about 1 million.
It might be brand loyalty, and they're watching the shows on YouTube as opposed to watching NXT, and then the people who watch WWE just take the night off on Wednesdays.
And I also just want to see, like, baseline stuff, like, you know, what is the lift from the baseline, because I think we get too hung up on like 700,000, 800,000, 900,000 or whatever. And what we should start looking. No, I think what we should start looking at is more like, okay, what's the lead in? How much is this an up from the lead in? Like how much would that look like above replacement or whatever? And like,
I don't think the lead in matters. And I'll tell you why, because it's always,
I want to figure out what the baseline is.
The 800th showing of Kong Skull Island or,
I'm just asking how many people have their TV on Kong Skull Island as we go into the show. I'm trying to figure out how much of this is just, I leave USA on all day. I like watching Monk
Law and
I like
Order
watching,
Poughkeepsie, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Reruns of Thunder in Paradise. I don't know what they show on TNT. Whatever. They should bring back Thunder in Paradise.
No, they should never do that. Yeah. That show is terrible.
Okay, fine. Whatever. You're a hater.
I am a hater.
Okay, yeah, terrible. Like, what did Hulk Hogan ever do that was so
wrestling?
Wrong? Okay.
That's what he did. He was terrible at everything he did in wrestling. That's what he did.
And outside of wrestling, well, largely.
Also the racial stuff, but yes, I get that.
No, I know, no, but also his conduct as a businessman, too. No, I feel like the joke sort of answers itself.
Can we hold that against him?
Possibly is probably one of the best things that he did. But anyways, let us move on.
Sex tapes? What I else think we have?
He's not a good guy, Jeff. Don't bring back Thunder in Paradise. Fine, we've killed
the joke. Deadspin. That was fun. Will over in New Japan, Will Ospreay has vacated the IWGP Heavyweight title due to neck issues. Combine that with COVID, Chris. New Japan is in a little bit of trouble right now.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously it's more than just COVID, right? Like, it's building up the stars of tomorrow. New Japan is not as hot as they were 8 years ago. It's not 2013 anymore. A lot of what helped New Japan have its kind of bigger appeal has been brought over to the AEW roster and is now on AEW every week. New Japan, in doing the Forbidden Door model, and kind of playing coy with how much interplay they're going to have with American promotions and that sort of thing here over the last several years when their stock was a little bit higher, is now kind of biting them in the ass now that their stock's a little bit lower because, like, you know, yeah, you could send people over here. And if they want to jumpstart things, that's probably what they're going to have to do. But you still have to strike a happy medium of, like, sending people over here, still running shows in, like, Korakuen Hall and in the Tokyo Dome and that sort of thing, building up stars of tomorrow. They've, for the first time in a long time, it feels like New Japan really needs to, like, hit the reboot button. And it's interesting to see, like, this really, I feel like the high era of the last decade had been over for a minute. But this really feels like, you know, clear line of delineation. Like, we are the glory days of 2013 to 2015. They gone now. We are moving on.
Finally, what is kind of interesting to me, and we don't talk about this company much, but Don Callis is no longer a vice president with Impact Wrestling / Anthem Entertainment. Will continue as an on-air personality with Kenny Omega. Now, the reason why this interests me is, number one, he and Kevin Kelly were probably the best commentary duo going at the time that he took this position with Impact Wrestling. And also, I just don't see the Kenny Omega thing having legs, needing a heel manager for a long time, because I think eventually they're going to turn them babyface. So I wonder what happens to Don Callis after this. Does he go to AEW full time, which already has far too many broadcasters? I mean, it's
And too many it's managers. It's the
broadcasting
managers.
Booth from the Naked Gun. You know, where they just have everybody from every sport in the booth at one point. But yeah, it looks like Don Callis may not be long for Impact after the contract runs out. So I found that interesting and I added it to the rundown.
Yeah. Do we any reason why he's no longer with Impact? Okay. I wanted to know that before I kind of started to expound too much further. Look, this is the tricky thing with doing a multi-brand, I'm going to collect all the belts sort of angle. You want to make sure that all the politics are in place to actually sustain that.
Look, I've made no secret that I'm not like in love with the Kallus Omega stuff. I like Kallus. I think that he's got a place in the biz. It's just, I mean,
I don't know. We had a
deal with Omega didn't really help Impact a whole lot up till now, right?
Yeah.
It just actually felt more like it's been siphoning talent away from Impact. And if you're into Impact, why not just go and watch AEW every week?
Well, it siphoned the good away. So it was siphoned.
Okay, look, Carl Anderson.
I love Carl Anderson. I like Gallon.
He was good at one point.
I don't like the Good Brothers act. I just, it's.
No, like as a tag team, they stink. I wish Anderson was doing a solo thing.
But it's an interesting segue because on the Voices of Wrestling Discord for fans, there's this Slack. I think it's Slack. One of the two. There is a Shake Them Ropes channel. We had a question. I hope I don't butcher your.
Oh my God! We have fans, a Slack, and
yes,
a question.
Velkej.
This is like the hat trick. You know, I watch some hockey.
Velkej Braca, I believe is how you say that. I'd like you to ask Chris next time if he changed his opinion about Kenny Omega as a champion, which is a thing he wanted to be a thing from the start of AEW instead of Jericho, because it was of things he and others criticized about AEW. I think Omega is better as a chaser. Also, the pause at the end of Chris is starting telling the joke. That was a great chef's kiss. Nice throwback to the Rob McCarron days, I believe, is why we appreciated that. But yeah, Chris, do you have you changed your opinion about Kenny Omega as a champion?
Yeah, I mean, this angle stinks, right? I think that Kenny Omega as the champion for AEW made sense in 2019. I think it made sense in early 2020, pre-COVID. But, you know, those were my opinions a couple of years ago. Wrestling is a dynamic product. I'm, like, not waffling on this. I want to kind of be clear here. I think that, like, even this current run of Omega could have been fine. But it got really hammy. It got really corny. And I guess, you know, maybe the response to me, which I think would be valid, is, look, Chris, Omega's always had this cornball ham shit in him. And you have to, you know, price in that any Kenny Omega title run is going to necessarily involve that. And if that's the argument, then one, I'm starting to be persuaded of that position. And two, then I guess let's keep Kenny Omega away from titles because, like, this ratio of comedy with serious sometimes, but even when he's being serious, it's still got to be comedy, like when he's intimidating Orange Cassidy this week. No, it's not main event stuff. So I'm, you know, like, here's the disparity, right? Like, you've got me on one side and then you've got, the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame putting Kenny Omega up in there for his work. Which is the real Kenny Omega. I guess that's really for everyone to decide for themselves. But for me, no, I have changed my opinion. I don't think he makes a good champion now. But I also don't think it was necessarily fait accompli that he was going to do a reformation of the Bullet Club, this weird gimmicky belt collector thing, the nude painting of himself and Don Callis, like all, you know, all the different like hammy crap as champion. I think there was a way for him to do this in a serious way. Also, like, I mean, who could have seen the goofy as hell exploding barbed wire death match finish coming? So, you know, trying to give myself a little bit of credit here, but yeah, no, my opinion has changed on that. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Let's make some editorial decisions here. Ice cold thoughts on WrestleMania Backlash, and then just what we liked for the week. And then we'll go.
Okay.
I watched WrestleMania Backlash live, and overall I liked the show. I did. I thought it was a perfectly acceptable wrestling show. Except for the zombie. The zombie thing ruined it. I mean, I won't say ruined it, but it really was just, it was, how should we put it? You have a fantastic dish that you've made from a restaurant, and then you put a scoop of dog crap on it. Now you can't avoid the dog
crap. Now let me ask you this. Would you have felt better if they had, you know, zigged instead of zagged here? I mean, Priest did say, I don't care if it's zombies, I don't care if it's aliens. Would you have felt better if we had gone the extraterrestrial route and the lumberjacks were from outer space?
You mean just a bunch of Chris Statlanders around the ring?
I mean, yeah, you know, like,
I mean, even
just aliens from the movie Aliens.
I took that line to think Batista was going to be one of the, was going to come out as one of the lumberjacks. I thought if we were going to play this straight. And then as soon as I saw the locker room skit on the pre-show, I went, oh, God. And of course, it's going to become a zombie movie where both are fighting against the zombies as these brainless hordes finally stop recognizing the rules of professional wrestling and go into eat brain. You know, and then they ate one of the people on there. It's not just.
I mean, but honestly, credit to the officiating in that match up until that point. They did a pretty good job keeping the zombies out of the ring.
Why didn't we have the zombie ref from NXT to maintain order with the zombies?
He really should have been outside and like, if okay, I'm sorry, if you're going to do this, go yes. all the way. You have the real human referee trying to coordinate with the zombie referee. Like, have the zombie referee eat the human referee for a spot. To allow for like interference.
I was hoping for zombie dance break with like the Thriller theme, and then maybe La Parca comes out with a chair.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I understood it. I wasn't as negative as a lot of other people because I go, this is product placement, this is cross branding garbage, but it also doesn't make people.
And it's a nothing match. It's a nothing match. Like you know, The Miz is The Miz. John Morrison is John Morrison. Yes. Yes, you're trying to build Damian Priest. You can clearly move him on from this. This is not the end of Damian Priest by anything. It's cross-promotional, so you are fulfilling business and contractual obligations, and the match had no stakes. This is not... It's if it was Cesaro versus Roman Reigns with zombie lumberjacks, I would be like on here going like, this is the most ridiculous thing I've seen on this show in at least 2 years. But like, this is
it makes people think professional wrestling is stupid in a way that other TV shows can't get away with doing things like this, or can get away with doing things like this. Like, you'd have like weird, spooky episodes of like Roseanne or Star Trek when they do the holodeck stuff and they're in the, time of Sherlock Holmes and dumb things like that.
Or like in the original series where they land on a planet of Nazis. Yes. Like, you know, yeah, I mean, like, with ridiculous premises. But yeah, no, for, I mean, the other thing is the tension is wrestling is obviously, you know, it exists in this sports
world. It's camp.
And
it's
so
camp
like,
too.
Yeah. And this is pure camp. And so I think like that's why this doesn't necessarily always kind of merge together or marry together so well.
Other than that, though, I mean, even the pre-show match between Ricochet and Sheamus, they basically re-ran on Raw the next night. Very good. The women had a very good night, I thought, between the triple threat with Asuka, Rhea Ripley, and Charlotte, who is now, look, but we're not going to go a lot into Monday because that's not stuff I like, but Charlotte is wrestling like she has a chip on her shoulder, and I'm kind of digging it, Chris. I mean, she's wrestling in terms of just how she's presenting herself out there. I like, and look,
it seems like she can move a little bit better right now. It seems like, you know, kind of some of the changes she's made here over the last couple few years here, specifically in the last year or two, have really helped her with her mobility. I think that's helping her in the ring. I mean, at least from what I'm
and
observing.
Look, you know, we are fans of the show here of Aunt Pam, but Bailey has had a very good week. I think she even got kudos from said Wrestling Observer about the match with Bianca Belair, how she paced it, how she was kind of, you know, taking Bianca through the paces, making her look like $1 million throughout that whole thing. And then on Friday, I just, Paulo Aziz, what up? That crack, man.
When it goes over to Paul, Paul's like, yeah. Like, I mean, like, I think, like, okay, the deal with Apollo and Aziz is like they need to just start like slowly dropping the kind of like the hard sell of this gimmick, and like I think it just needs to have a lighter presentation,
a little bit lighter, just a little bit, as opposed to the serious socio-political presentation. Also on this Backlash show, I thought Braun Strowman was trying things. I mean, he tried to do that big guy match, that triple threat.
He did a rolling
senton. Yes, he did a rolling senton.
That was bonkers.
Drew decides he's going to do every flying thing in the book. Also, it's other than the, I hated the electrical spot. I did, because they didn't write Bobby Lashley off of the match that way. And that has to be a move.
No, no, an electrical spot has to be an injury.
Here comes Bobby Lashley. He's recovered from being electrocuted. I mean...
The only way it would not be an ender is you go for the pinfall and the guy has like a jolt.
Yes.
Like that's your out of a pinfall otherwise. But like getting electrocuted needs to at least be a spot where I'm able to roll the guy into the ring and get an easy, unobtruded count and cover.
Yes, that was preposterous. Big, meaty men beating each other up, and I dug that match.
It over-delivered for me. I think it's over-delivering for maybe the wrong reason. It's over-delivering because, like, I don't take Braun Strowman seriously as a entity anymore because he's stupid. And we really played into the Braun is stupid stuff. Even this angle sort of trades a little bit on the Braun is stupid thing. like it's now an actual character point of, like, this guy's dumb. And so... frankly, when he does high-risk maneuvers and he doesn't win, that also ports into the "this guy is dumb" narrative, which is not a thing you want for your babyface. This guy is dumb is actually not a great babyface trait.
My favorite moment on commentary, though, was Bianca and Bayley when Bayley's slapping Bianca in the head twice. That one's for Michael Cole. That one's for you, McAfee. Like, yeah, totally had it coming for you there, Cole, but I don't know what I did there. I'm liking the little... heel inflections that McAfee's putting on this.
McAfee is good as a heel commentator. I don't know if WWE likes him as much as you and I like him.
He has a problem with the hyperbola because it comes out in the baby champ match. The Mysterios winning the tag titles against the Dirty Dogs, where he calls that the frog splash like the most amazing frog splash. Like, you know that Montez Ford is on this roster, right? You know that, right? It was a fine sprawl, but then it eventually became the greatest of Dominic's career or whatever, and they fixed it.
Yeah, he's got a little bit of Shivani-itis.
That was a nice moment, though. I mean, they're starting to do those nice little moments. How do you feel about winning this title right afterwards, where, you know, they're actually somewhat playing the real of the situation? I dig that.
There are a few small things in terms of formatting that they've been doing lately that, like, I consider to be modest improvements. It's not like show-saving stuff, but, like, for example, having all of your champions at the top of the ramp at the start of the show today or this week on SmackDown.
That was weird.
Yeah, I like that.
You? I didn't
that
like
was weird.
I thought it was weird.
I liked it when you had Heyman come out and pull it together. I think I would have maybe had them all wondering why they're standing out there, and then had Heyman come out and explain, like, I summoned you all out here to, you know, sort of make a statement. But I like the fact that they are setting up things from week to week so that, like, you know, NXT, we now have a sense of what's coming up next week. We get that the same way with SmackDown. We've got this Jimmy and Jay thing that's wrapping around next week. We're getting a little bit more of tune into the next episode to see this going on in our serialized programming, which I think is good because it's a serialized program. So I think that that's good. It's not show saving stuff, though.
Yeah. And then, you know, Cesaro and Roman was very, very good, but I never bought for a second Cesaro was going to win, and that was a problem. But I liked that it was
I have two problems. One, Cesaro never had a chance of winning. Two, having Cesaro lose clean, it absolutely took the intrigue away from him to try to get his heat back. This dude lost clean. Roman was like, I don't want your help, so I'm sending Jimmy to go deal with James. I love the James tweak on SmackDown. This small little tweaks like that. Like, they work, though. But sending Jimmy away and then having Roman go out there, wrestle a strategic match that worked a limb, and winning because he did the limb work, Cesaro has absolutely no claim to the throne at this point. I'm not interested in him having another match with Seth Rollins. I also absolutely hate this morally conflicted Seth Rollins character because I don't see how it fits into the Roman Reigns storyline, which makes me go, like, where are they going with the Roman Reigns stuff and the Jimmy and Jay stuff? Like, I don't know. I thought Roman's storyline was better when there was the tease that Seth is going to be incorporated into the tribe, so to speak, and that was going to be the point of tension. And now it seems like the point of tension is Rollins can't decide if he's a good person or a bad person, and like Rollins stinks as a babyface. Like he's a bad.
I agree. I mean, this kind of is a good segue because I didn't have anything else on Backlash to talk about, but it's stuff I
like.
No,
okay, I mean, like. Okay. With the Cesaro stuff, I think that Cesaro either needed to lose by interference from Jay, or like there just needed to be more ambiguity around Cesaro losing.
Yeah, I'll push back a little bit on you though, because you know how they do it. They do it that Jimmy somehow cost Cesaro the match, and is Jimmy a heel or is he on Cesaro's side or you know that kind of thing. So
that's fine. Okay. No, I mean honestly, have it run through Jimmy and Jay. I think, frankly, that storyline needed that beat. I don't think the story is stronger or better off, especially given the fact that in the build-up to all of this, Jeff, every single beatdown, like end-of-show beatdown or whatever, featured tension between Jimmy having to make a decision, or James having to make a decision about Jimmy and Roman in the ring at the time. So either at that point you have James walk away from Jimothy and Roman.
You're just making up names now, so stop.
Jimothy is a normal name. Lots of people are named Jimothy.
Okay. No, I'll tell you what the button needs on this is that for next week, and this will get us into SmackDown talk a little bit, because there's a couple things I liked on SmackDown. I think the button needs to be, I was really hoping when Jay went to Roman about the tag team match, that Roman would be, yeah, we got a tag team match next week, but it's going to be Jimmy and me. I'll take this one. You sit this one out. And then that kind of that, Mitch and Murray are coming from downtown to talk to the boys kind of thing. It's that, the boss is getting in to fight with Jimmy as opposed to the regular Usos. I think that would have been...
That would actually be a really fun tweak. Maybe that is the tweak they go with this Friday here, is that like Roman's like, no, we're all family here. I'll do the match with your brother. And like, yes. I love the Street Profits making fun of the Usos. Like Montez Ford making fun of the Usos was very, very funny. Much
funnier
than I expected it
to be. That was on three things I really liked about SmackDown. And the other one, Rick Bugenhagen is now on the SmackDown roster as Rick Boogs, B-O-O-G-Z, I believe, or G-S. Play for Shinsuke Nakamura.
We got to applaud yes. McAfee. It took all the control he had to not say Boogs. and you know that he wanted to call him Ricky Boogs or some variation of this.
Remember, he goes, why do they call him Boogs? And Cole goes, because that's his last name. that's Vince in the ear right
And then
there.
McAfee goes, what kind of last name is that? And then, yeah, he gets corrected on it again. Like, yeah, I know.
The McAfee troublemaking impish thing is strong, and it's going to be beaten out of him one way or another, or Miz is going to be in that commentary chair.
Yeah, I think Miz is going to be in that commentary chair. That's what makes this great, is that, like, every week there's just going to be a little tensione, but like, McAfee's actually good at this.
Do we need Xavier Woods playing themes on trombone, followed by Rick Bugenhagen playing themes on guitars to distract people? That's the only...
I don't like that he's, like, good guy Elias.
Yes.
That's the problem here, is that like we have the guitar playing as established as a heel thing. In terms of the actual guitar playing, I'm sure you all are expecting some sort of commentary on that,
no.
Right? His tremolo picking is fine. Shut up, Hawkins. No one cares about you. I'm doing this for Trisha and Cody, the real people, the people I care about in this audience. Okay, Trisha. Cody less so. The tremolo picking, fine. I think it is, people need to realize that it's much harder to play on live TV and do in-ear monitoring and play in a convincing way through in-ear monitoring. And also, guitar distortion and overdrive. If you don't mic it up or get like the right sound of it, it always is going to have that weird fizzy, like flat thing. Like I thought Bugenhagen's tone stunk, but I don't blame that on him so much as I blame that on like they direct into his guitar probably have them on a wireless set. Don't actually have it running through an amp. Don't have that amp mic'd. Don't have, like, put some reverb on it, guys. Put a little bit of delay on it. Make the kid sound good, because it was super dry. And so, like, any mistake or any flub or any, like, missed attack or whatever kind of stuck out. You know, he's got to practice a little bit more doing that live Shinsuke Nakamura entrance, if that's going to be a thing. But also, just don't, like, put the guy out there to, if he's going to be good guy Elias, he needs to go out there and have good showings every time he plays guitar. Otherwise, he's Max Payne or bad guy Elias.
Okay. Well, I think most people enjoy the guitar, Chris, other than you. It's like, his tone,
I think the tuxedo. I think the tuxedo Flying V Epiphone is good choice. I like it. I think it looks metal. Use the Gibsons for the times that you need to look good. Use the Epiphones for the times that you need to hit people over the head with the guitar. I like the tuxedo look. I like the metal guy stuff. I actually like the pairing of him and Nakamura as well, but. I think that it makes sense. I think that I think Nakamura playing around with the crown was actually kind of fun.
McAfee, particularly
the cat stuff. Hawkins, the cat stuff was really great, right? Didn't you like the cat stuff?
I was hoping you wouldn't watch so that you didn't see the cat
stuff. No. I think it's important to watch the Brogd every week, but particularly if they have cats on it.
Robert Mitchum from Scrooge. Yeah, we do programming for cats.
Is that an option? Are they doing wrestling for
cats now?
Maybe
we have
now?
A detective who plays with a string. I liked McAfee's little line where, man, I don't think I've ever seen Baron Corbin look that bald. That was great.
I liked Baron Corbin's, "You missed some notes."
Of course you did. Other things I liked. Over on NXT, I think Hit Row Records has cool potential.
B-Fab just, like, sort of oozes cool. And the big guy, I mean, look, everyone, but they've established characters for everyone.
Except
they established a character for him. He's just not going to go anywhere. But, like, he's got the tag team with the little guy. He's a hothead. He gets himself into trouble. When the tag team loses, they're going to lose because Ashanti the Adonis is a hothead and weak link. That's going to help keep
he's
the big
centric.
Guy strong.
He's centric in the Hurt Business.
Yes. Yeah. Right, but, I mean, here's the thing, though. They're on NXT, so there might actually be a narrative payoff to this, unlike the Hurt Business.
I love Swerve's menacing as leader. I think that's really also what kind of brought it all together. I mean, you have them doing the little catchphrases about Hit Row, but then Swerve kind of brings it all together kind of with that menace, and I dig that about it.
I think it will get particularly over, too, the first time, like, he does, like, when they kick Ashanti the Adonis out of the group is when I think it will really come together for the remaining three, which is
replace him with Leon Ruff. You watch.
Oh my God, that'd be like, and essentially Swerve just mad dogs Leon Ruff out, like he keeps beating on Leon Ruff until they break him.
Yeah.
That could be interesting. That could be interesting.
Other things I liked. Let's stick around in NXT universe before I go into the other universe. NXT UK. I thought the NXT UK was solid this week. I watched it while you were watching SmackDown because I didn't think I was gonna have a chance to do it, but the A-Kid Tyler Bate match was pretty damn great. Rampage Brown and Wolfie had a big mean guy match, even though there's a little too much grappling in it. But it was big.
It's such an easy watchable show every week. It's 1 hour. There's always, like, at least one good match. There's one good prelim match, and oftentimes the main event's a pretty watchable little thing, whether it's Mako Satomura, Tyler Bate versus A-Kid. I same experience. Rampage Brown versus Wolfgang, fun stuff. I'm into it. And the main event, fun stuff.
The
I'm
Mako
into it.
Promo was good. I hate Noam Dar with a passion because I find him just way too over the top obnoxious to be taken seriously. Like
there was a sweet spot with him that they found at one point, and then they took that sweet spot and, like, turned the gain up.
And
to
now
10.
He's honky tonk man, which is fine.
Yes.
But I liked the interplay with Ilya Dragunov with the the bathrobe and the comfort animal. And Ilya's playing it a little bit too big for me, but I liked the interplay, the trolling there of Ilya Dragunov trying to break him. Looks like Whoop Guy might get killed next week, which I'm fine. To Teo Man. And they did a little bit of the old... The old NXT High School. They're in the... Although it's NXT The Office. NXT UK The Office. With Nathan Frazier and the guy's named Shaw Samuels.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, look, Frazier needs to get some W's. A match against Shaw Samuels is a good one. I like Shaw Samuels. I think he's a good standard middle of the road. Like
he's a great brawling heel type. He's a great rent-a-goon.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, he's great. He's a good character actor in that sense.
Yeah. And even Sam Gradwell still growing on me a little bit.
Yeah. There was nothing bad on this show this week. Yeah. I mean, your girl won.
We didn't even talk about that. Amal?
Yeah, Amal beat Xia Brookside in what was perplexing.
Perplexing. Don't get me wrong. It was perplexing, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, they turned Amal heel. They wanted to get her over. Look, she's rough as hell. Like, she still needs work. I think the heel thing works better for her than the babyface thing does. But that's namely because the heel style requires you to work a little bit slower. And so that it kind of helps kind of cover up. If you're not a babyface and you don't have that babyface speed about you, heel is the way to go. And so I think that works for Amal, but I don't think much else does. And I'm just confused why she's beating,
Xia Brookside. Why are you beating Xia Brookside?
Don't get it.
She's the only pure babyface you have left now. Given some moves that may happen.
I mean, I guess maybe that's forecasting a Mako W here, perhaps. Maybe Mako is the one who knocks off Kaylee Ray.
This company overall does not like having people get behind young, cute baby faces in any brand. It's always, we got to kill that. Like, Mansoor hasn't been seen in 2 weeks on this stupid Raw show.
Man... Boy, like, talk about a terrible, like, it's slapjack levels of mishandling with Mansoor.
The slapjack stuff's earned. I mean, if slapjack really wanted to, the problem with slapjack right now, to get into that analysis, is he's not causing chaos. And he was there to cause chaos, and now he's not causing chaos. So of what use is a slapjack?
Oh, I think he's still got maximum utility. This is not a place... It's not like the status quo right now in WWE is great. I mean, I feel like society cries out for a slapjack.
He is there to either take over or cause chaos, and he is doing neither. He is not doing either.
Society yearns.
Has he taken over a single table in catering? Has he taken over, like, the chicken stand at catering?
There's still time. I mean, the SummerSlam build is just beginning.
Yeah. Oh, we're getting that main event push, finally. How become Uganda and join the army?
He joins up with Commander Aziz. He'd
be Lieutenant Slapjack.
Sergeant Slapjack, yeah.
Hey, where's the mask still with the uniform?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, dear Lord, there's way too many Slapjack jokes on this show.
Tony Storm beats Zoe Stark. We're getting, like, I don't have a problem with that. We need to keep Storm strong. I don't have a problem. Look, Storm and Stark having like a ongoing back and forthy thing right now. It's not overstaying its welcome, and I think it's good for Zoe Stark to have a rivalry.
If we have it the same match two more weeks in a row, get them away from each other for a bit.
No. They need to break away from each other now. The Frankie Monet thing, I'm very interested to see what the in-ring product of Frankie Monet looks like. I have doubts. I have doubts.
What did you think of Tony's new finisher?
Oh my God! It's a wild finisher. I had to watch
judo
it a couple
throw
of times
into
to
a
understand
into a DDT.
Yeah, the physics on it are pretty wonky, yes. but they look cool. It's a good looking move. It's just weird. And I, you know, it's one of those moves. It's like, I feel like not everyone's going to have the dexterity to take it and
That's
execute it
fear.
The way that,
My fear, because they do this with baby faces. When they turn you heel, they don't want you doing the baby face finisher. That always, like, the belly to Bailey only gets a two count now in heel world. So you have to have that heel finisher to make it a three, much like Stormbreak or whatever the heck she calls her, Powerbomb.
Storm Zero. Yes.
Will only get a two count from now on. So you need that other move to get you to three. Yeah, NXT was okay. I think Candace is a very good comedic performer on these sketches. I just have no... I mean, we have a new U.S. champ. Great. We get Gargano.
No, I'm really over the Indy Hartwell and Dexter thing when they're like, Index is back. I'm like, no, Index needed to be over. Like, you guys ended that story. Like, it's over. Like, I don't care if Indy and Dexter Lumis ever get together. We haven't seen Dexter Lumis on in a while. And like in this whole like love affair thing, we really have no sense of why Dexter loves Indy so much. We have it like, so like it's frankly just kind of weird now that he's still stalking her. And it's weird. Like, I mean, like all we're getting is Indy is crazy. And so is Dexter. It's not anything for me. $1 Million Man. This week was like the worst $1 Million Man week yet. Jake Atlas beating Cameron Grimes. Okay, whatever. But roll like, up. I hate the WWE distraction finish roll up of, oh my God, theme music is playing. And it's not helping Grimes right now. And I don't really see like, how does Grimes beat DiBiase? Does DiBiase decide that he loves Jake Atlas? Like, how does that help Jake Atlas? This is overstated. It's welcome. It's fine for a week. It was maybe okay for two, but this is not an actual angle or story and never needed to be.
I think we get Gargano getting elevated to go fight Fallen Prey. And it's odd because I really liked that hype video for next week's match between Finn and Karrion Kross. I thought that was very
well done.
Yeah,
I liked it too.
I thought it was very well done.
No, I liked it as well. It's, you know, the Finn Balor thing is just there's no belief that Balor's going to beat Karrion Kross. Balor has not been putting Kross on the run lately, and even usually that's a red herring in WWE world. So what you'd really want is Balor coming out and having pretty dominant wins over people for the last 4 to 6 weeks here in the lead up.
And
to
hipster
this.
Bobby Fish had a good promo this week too. I thought that's the best promo I've heard from him.
We now know who wronged him. We know who wronged him. They established the wronging.
Pete Dunne wronged Bobby Fish. So
Bobby Fish.
I think that'll be fun. Wrong. I'm looking forward to that. I guess there maybe is going to be some sort of Red Dragon reunion at some point here. That'll be an interesting little inflection point as well. Cool Kyle is not cool. He continues to be uncool Kyle. He just needs to go back to like being himself. To quote Thelonious Monk, the coolest person is the person who is like within themselves. That's like a paraphrase, but like the genius is the person who is most like themselves. That's the Monk line. Like it's same thing with the cool thing. A cool person is the person most like themselves. It's the fact that they're comfortable with themselves. And this Kyle O'Reilly character does not feel like himself. The music doesn't feel like Kyle O'Reilly. The swagger and everything feels contrived with him. And he needs to find a way to be natural or just not try to be cool. Just be yourself.
Legado del Fantasma and the Grizzled Old Veterans. That was a nice, stiff matchup until the end. I dug that.
Yeah, it sure was. No, that was a pretty darn good match right up until the end. Thatcher and Ciampa as a team are really kind of outperforming my expectations. I mean, I think they're both great wrestlers, so like it's not like I expected them to be bad, but I've just been really pleasantly surprised with how good they are.
And we're ending with this because there's a lot to talk about if we want to, but I loved that AEW show on Wednesday. I loved a lot about it. Not just the wrestling, but like it was like a bunch of promos that were into the camera. They had a little bit of oomph to them, which I appreciate, especially Kazarian. I dug Kazarian's promo quite a bit. $2 for the use of the word recompense, which is not used enough nearly in wrestling promos. But promos to the camera, doing those tapes if you can. The Acclaimed. I want every match to now be Caster raps And then, what's the name of the other guy?
Oh, Bowens.
Bowens then goes, and that's what, and then he just gets decked every time. I want that to happen now, every time, where Caster's writing checks that Bowens has to cash eventually.
Max Caster is like an interesting analog to Zach Gibson in the sense that Max Caster can come down the ramp, and in the course of him walking through the curtain to him getting down to the ring, absolutely have nuclear heat on himself. And like, you need those type of guys, especially for some of your mid-card matches that have like not belt stakes or whatever, that actually have like, you know, just, they need to have personal animosity. Like, they're good wrestlers in the ring too. Like, Bowens and Caster are both really entertaining in the ring. They don't work too fast or whatever. So I think that works well. I enjoyed the Moxley and Kingston promo. Was funny because they clearly went super long, so they just had to like white sheet it and just cut to an end.
The rapper and his friend. Yeah.
Oh God. Yeah. No, that stuff was really no. Good. This is great, right? So like, Kingston and Moxley like get some serious heat on the Acclaim with like the whole like Boaz is just a sidekick thing. The Acclaim come back and they get some heat on Kingston and Moxley on their way to the ring.
Like a box this of gets Newports us, is just a fantastic line.
I love the box of Newport was a great line. Oh man, great image in my head. And then also yes, obviously the line about Renee too. And so that makes the clash and the lockup have some instant heat. And like, yeah, no, this is a fun match. I thought that Christian Cage, for his part this week on the show, another sneaky, good, clever, like he's not outworking everyone, like in terms of work rate or whatever. Like, but what he is doing is, one, a lot of good storytelling in the ring, great pacing in the ring, a nice kind of usage of he's really good at ebby flowy stuff, so like he knows how to pick up the pace a little bit, pull it back in. He's starting to tease a little bit of this heel characterization, a little bit of a heel edge to his persona, but we're still kind of like, you know, mostly on the babyface side of the ledger. I liked this match. That was good.
Watching the two filmed vignettes, I watch for the minor characters and what they're doing within there. First of all, Doc Samson in the Orange Cassidy Kenny Omega thing, looking over the shoulder to watch the tape footage and just nodding his head in disapproval, made that skit for me. Everything else after that, I could care less about, but you know, the guy is just
Orange Cassidy didn't deliver for his part at the end of the skit. Yeah, no, I thought one, the Callis and Omega wind up overstayed its welcome. It probably doesn't shock anyone that I'm not a big Kenny Omega fan, but like, I thought it was fine. But like, okay, we get it. Like, I hate the I'm an executive vice president crap. I mean, that is
I'm very tired.
That reeks of the bad old days of WCW in the bad days.
Yeah,
of
when
WCW,
Ric Flair was like the president of the company.
Vince Russo crap. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's very Vince Russo era WCW of like, we're talking about the politics backstage, brother, because that's going to get us over, and we need Orange Cassidy to be a good little mascot. Like, that is not helping Orange Cassidy as a character. Like this. Everything else is fake, but this little moment right here is real crap. Not good. Not good. I didn't think Orange Cassidy delivered in his part. I thought the premise was fine. I agree with you. I was watching Doc Simpson as well. I thought he was very entertaining. What was your other package?
The Pinnacle's Last Supper type of vignette. The only thing that didn't work for me was Sean Spears, to be honest with you. And I thought they should just left it as he didn't get his drink as opposed to beating up a ref. But there were moments in that thing where if you're watching the minor players or the guy who's not getting focus, it was a lot of fun. Like watching Tully Blanchard give that first appalled stare and then just in awe stare of Wardlow as he's drinking the bottle at the table. I thought Cash, I always want to call him Scott Dawson, but Cash Harwood had a rather fun promo about, I'm tired of being in these personal fights because it's keeping us from being great. Dax just has to sit there and look like Dax. I mean, he's just kind of the guy. I thought MJF had a pretty good menace in his promo.
This was really good at showing at once cohesion, but also divergences in personalities. But like, this is not the divergence in personalities moment or whatever in the story, but like, I like that Tully is perhaps too civilized for all of this at the end of the day. That he's looking at Wardlow and initially he's like, ooh, okay, why? Like, come on, dude, have some class or whatever. He looks at Spears. Spears loses his shit. And then Tully's like, all right, here's some money. That should take care of it. Like, he's not a good guy or whatever. But like, Tully also realizes that there's a grievance here and that like, he's, these kids are a little out of hand and he needs to tame these wild men a little bit. I like the tension between the tag team, the featured tag team of the Revival, like they want title shots or whatever. And so when MJF is making this about him, there's always going to be a little bit of attention. Whenever MJF makes this about personal feuds, there's always going to be a little bit of attention for FTR because they don't really give a crap about MJF's personal beef. They're not really here for the personal stuff. So MJF has to keep kind of feeding them with money. I like that little tension on the table. And then, yeah, and then, you know, I like Wardlow as just like the umbrella guy. And then Sean Spears as the loose cannon. So we actually got with each person a reason why the Pinnacle might not have cohesion with any one of those people. But that's not what the promo was about tonight. And we're building up to this stadium stampede thing that I think will be done like more serious. You know,
it's the wrong order. Is we should have had stadium stampede and then blood and guts. But I get it. I get what they're doing.
The Pinnacle stuff was good. The problem for me was all the Inner Circle stuff. I just the Inner Circle feels really flat right now.
Although Hager cut a good promo in there, and he's not known to cut very good promos. It's just it's a little too. I think Sammy brings too much comedy to it in a way, or too lighthearted to it in a way.
So does Jericho in a way too. Like, I mean, Jericho's finding his footing as a babyface character here, but like every so often he does sort of like pivot back to comedy.
He has
Jericho
sports and entertainment like, instincts at this point.
Yes. And I think he needs to be respected veteran legend. I mean, I think a good thing that could have happened during this promo, especially since they don't have a good way of actually paying it off, is Jericho shows his baby facedness and shows team cohesion with Sammy. They address the miscommunication at the end of Blood and Guts and kind of hug it out. And like that's it. That's the way you bury off that angle because you don't have a real way of paying it off one way or another. I think that would humanize Jericho and help get this Jericho babyface character over a lot more than the yuck yucks, my jerk off friend stuff. I think we need to just have this guy really committed to being a mentor to younger people. That is an admirable thing. Most young people would like to have an older mentor, and most young people have a resentment to older people who don't know when it's time for them to start taking, you know, kind of a back role. And you know, when they view a gerontocracy starting to form here. So like, I think that Jericho being the guy who knows, hey, look, I should still be respected. And we all think he should still be respected, but also I understand that I need to build up the stars of tomorrow or whatever. I think that that helps get this Jericho character over more than any jokes ever will.
Yeah, that's about all I had. I mean, I really enjoyed the show overall. I'm looking for Miro. Oh, Miro was great. Miro was so fantastic.
My God, Miro is on fire. It's like this Miro had been in hibernation, but like he's roasting everybody. I mean, he's almost roasting everybody too hard. Like, Duffy Allen, go back and make your granny student video. Like, I mean, come on. I'm just dying. Even I forget what he said to Jake the Snake, but the yoga's not gonna fix you. The problem with Rusev, or the problem with Miro is that he's so funny that he's so naturally funny, and like even when he's roasting people, it's just he's too funny. The accent helps make the lines would be in and of themselves substantively funny in and of themselves. However, the voice, the character,
the look,
the angry Bulgarian guy screaming these searing roasts at you makes every one of those roasts funnier and sear more. And like, it's just hard for him to be a pure heel when he is roasting so good. So like, that's the only problem I have with the Rusev
stuff. We're big on serious stuff here. But somewhere down the line, 6 months, 9 months, a year, Miro and Max Caster have to get together and either roast each other or roast somebody else. Just like one of those makeshift teams.
Oh my God. An extended Miro and Max Caster feud. Like that would be great with Caster. You want to turn Caster face and have him and Miro just like going after each other, or make them a team. Miro and the Acclaim would actually be a very funny, like, little mini faction. Yeah, I'm into that. I'm here for that.
That's all I got. You got anything else?
That's all I got this week, too.
We'll end it there. You've been listening to Shake Them Ropes. Follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word, on the Twitter. We are available in audio on all your platforms, Apple, Google Play, Stitcher, etc. And also on video, coming to you at the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel. My name is Jeff Hawkins. You can follow me at CrapGame13. Mostly bad jokes about wrestling. That's what I do on that Twitter stream. You can follow Chris at DWATG, where he doesn't talk about wrestling on his Twitter stream because he's trying to give a brand extension to his other shows, which he will plug at this time.
Yeah, you can always chat with me, like, you know, via direct messages or whatever about wrestling if you want to. But mostly I talk about politics at DWATG, because Don't Worry About the Government is my news and politics podcast. You can find that on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. On the most recent episode, we talk about the news in the Middle East. We talk about the CDC's recent guidelines and their changing of the guidelines. We also talk about scandals affecting both Democratic and Republican politicians. Literally so many of those these days, I could have done an entire show on just that alone. So if you want to hear all of that, check that out over at don'tworry.tv. Also on that episode, most recent episode, I curse out Cody while eating a terribly spicy piece of Nashville hot chicken. So you got to catch it. You got to see it. And you can do that over at patreon.com/DWATG. Now, Jeffrey, it is time for us to get our skillets out and start making our quiche. What you're going to want to do here is get your cast iron skillet. Look at that. Look at that. Who's ready to cook?
The joke died after you said quiche.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.